Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be taking a deep dive into the opportunity in Vietnam and Vietnamese equities after the recent volatility we've seen across Asian markets and indeed global markets in the wake of Donald Trump's tariffs. And to do that, we're very kindly joined today by Craig Martin, who is the chairman of Dynam Capital, the manager of the Vietnam Holding Investment Trust. Craig, very much welcome you back to the podcast today.
It's great to speak to you again, Jonathan.
So a lot happening. This is going to be a really interesting podcast. We're going to be getting into the details of tariffs, what it means for Vietnam and the outlook going forward. But before we get into it, Craig, please could you give us an introduction, first of all, to yourself, but as well as Vietnam Holding, for those that may not be aware of the trust.
Sure. So I'm Craig Martin. I'm chairman of Dynam Capital. We're the fund manager for Vietnam Holding, which is listed on the main board of the London Stock Exchange under the ticker VNH. It's easy to access through all the platforms and brokers. And it's a way to express an interest in one of the great markets in Asia, in Vietnam, one of the top growth stories in this part of the world, which is a dynamic, ever-changing part of the world. So if people want to get exposure to Vietnam, then Vietnam Holding is a great way for them to access it.
And we're going to be delving down into the trust in more detail on this podcast. So, you know, I think the first thing we should probably do, Craig, is address the volatility. And we've seen sharp declines in asset prices across the boards. The volatility after the tariffs was very widespread, and Vietnam Holding got caught up in that. But I'm looking here at the movements that we saw in the trust, and it was pretty violent on the couple of days after the announcements of the tariffs. But I'd like to just drill down into the composition of those declines and look at how much of that was actually NAV decline and how much was a widening of the discount, just to give listeners a flavour of what the opportunity is at the moment.
Well, look, Jonathan, as you say, most asset classes across the world, the Vietnam market, the stock market, reacted very badly to Liberation Day. And it sold off heavily for two consecutive days at the market limit, so down 7% each day and pretty much across the board, everything. No discrimination around what stock, just as panic. Then Vietnam had a public holiday on the Monday. And then when it came back, the market sold off again by another 4%, again, pretty much across the board. So this pulled the NAV of the trust in dollar terms down by about 20%. The announcement, I should say, of the pause that Trump gave drove the NAV up again by about 10% across 2 days. So the NAV is about 10% down for the month. But as you mentioned, the fund shares had a pretty torrid time. They fell further, about 30%. Due to Liberation Day, and the discount widened. It had been at low, very low single digits to close to more than 15% briefly, I think. So it is since narrowed way back down to single digits, and it remains the lowest discount of the three London-listed Vietnam funds. But the share price is still down about 14% during the month in its share price. But I look across, Bloomberg terminals, and everything's down. Still, it hurts when it's down on your fund and on your stocks.
Of course. And I would note that the Vietnam Holding Trust actually traded at a premium in the recent months. So that's quite interesting now that there's that discount. And we're going to talk a little bit later on in the podcast about some of the measures that you're putting in place to manage that discount and have put in place to manage that discount over the last year or so. But let's look now, Craig, at the response from Vietnam, because as you say, there were a number of days where the market was limit down. It did rebound, and Vietnam was actually one of those countries very well publicized to get on the phone to Donald Trump. So what have they been doing? What have they been talking about? And what can you see them doing to mitigate any risks of tariffs going forward?
Look, the Vietnamese have been very proactive way before Liberation Day, and they were quick to called President Trump when he was inaugurated. And they'd been negotiating even a few days before Liberation Day on some very specific goods that they were going to put zero tariffs on for the US. And they've been constantly trying to seek ways to enhance bilateral trade between the US and Vietnam, which is partly why it was a bit of a shock to the market to be hit so heavily with those extraordinarily high reciprocal tariffs. I think the only truth spoken by the president on Liberation Day was the Vietnamese are great people and great negotiators. And indeed they are. You know, they were then very quick. They sent a trade delegation out led by a vice prime minister to further bring attention to the potential for striking a deal on a range of goods, looking at, you know, buying planes from the US, Boeings, if Boeing ever gets its act together, grains, US exports, as well as looking to get US investment into Vietnam and look at bilateral wins. And they were also very quick to seek a delay in implementing the tariffs. The US Secretary for Treasury, I think, said the first movers will benefit. And I think Trump had said this as well. So let's see. The Vietnamese were very proactive and you know, very commercially savvy. And wanting to strike a fair deal because those retaliatory tariffs seem to have very little basis, other than the fact that, you know, Vietnam causes a trade deficit with the US. But that's because, you know, Vietnam's an emerging economy. It's been seen as a friendly shore. It's attracted a lot of manufacturing from US companies that have moved some of their manufacturing from China to Vietnam for the intent purpose of exporting to the US. So, of course, the country has a large deficit with the US, and it's been increasing over the last 4 or 5 years. But, you know, Vietnam wants to seek a fair deal, and it's hopefully it can strike a balance.
Thank you. So, Craig, of course, it's easy to talk about the negatives around tariffs, but from where you're sitting and the conversations that you're having with the management team at Vietnam Holding, what are the positives that you're taking away from Liberation Day?
I have to be honest, Jonathan, and say I don't think anyone wins in a trade war. Maybe it's just my age or my upbringing, or I've lived and benefited and seen the benefits, the gains from trade, and I've seen the benefits from, you know, the benefits outweigh the negatives in globalization, in my opinion. So it's all about managing risks. It's about, and this is for a country as well as for a fund, it's about managing risk. It's diversifying and playing to strengths. But let's focus on Vietnam. Vietnam has many strengths. It has a strong character. It's a very determined nation. They're very resilient. Has a very strong educational framework. The teachers are actually some of the best in Asia. It's got a relatively cheap labor force and is a relatively low-cost producer of many goods, many raw materials, but also semi-finished materials, including things like steel, which, you know, the UK is struggling to make in a cost-productive manner, Vietnam can do so. So I think the positives are, of course, the temporary reprieve from the punitive or punishing retaliatory tariffs, as well as temporary exemptions on mobile phones and IT goods. Vietnam's a massive manufacturer of electronic gadgets and phones. It's, I think 60% of Samsung's tablets and phones are made in Vietnam. A lot of Apple's gear is made in Vietnam. So I think those having those temporary exemptions is good. I think also Vietnam now has the tariff as everywhere except China. And China's massive tariff, which I think is unsustainable, but for a while it's there, will encourage more investment by Chinese companies and also more production of goods. And Xi Jinping was just in Vietnam 2 days ago and trying to strike deals with Vietnam and see Vietnam also as a strong trading partner. So Vietnam will look to diversify its markets, strengthen and play to its core competitive advantages, but will want to get clarity on where it sits in the trade tariff. So, you know, there's 90 days to negotiate. Vietnam was quick to move, and let's hope that fairness and sensible minds prevail.
Indeed, you make a very good point there, Craig. It's clarity at this point. And, you know, unfortunately, with Donald Trump in the White House, that's not something that we have at this point in time. So looking at the portfolio now, Craig, it's interesting that Vietnam itself is a big exporting country, but looking here at the composition of the portfolio, you've got quite a nice mix across technology, industrialization, and property there. So what does the portfolio look like in terms of direct exposure to exports? You know, how much of the portfolio is directly involved in trade? Would you see some of your holdings, of course, with the big weighting towards technology, being shielded from some of the impacts of tariffs? You know, really sort of looking here at the overall portfolio, how comfortable are you with your weighting towards technology that maybe shields you from some of that direct impact of tariffs?
Well, Jonathan, you know, Vietnam has at least two great stories. One is the manufacturing to be part of the global supply chain. You seeing its 17 free trade agreements and manufacturing for export. And that's attracted and benefited lots of foreign direct investment. The other great leg is the strength of its domestic economy, the 100 million people, and the fact that government's really investing in infrastructure to boost domestic consumption. So on the first part, on the trade and export, we've always been very careful not to, you know, back a shoe manufacturer or a phone manufacturer, because there you concentrate the risk. So where we've been exposed to the export story, it's been through logistics and services and through industrial parks. That's always only been a fairly small part of the portfolio. And probably only about 10% of the portfolio is kind of directly exposed through those kind of entities. We have cash as well in the portfolio, about 10%. So it's a bit of a buffer. But you're right. The portfolio has benefited from, or will benefit from, being a good mix of our high conviction, well-known names. Now, as I said earlier, the market was indiscriminate in its fall when every stock came down. Our top holding, FPT, is a domestic champion in software and services, as well as an export champion in software and services. It already has, you know, strong US presence. It's got a strong Japanese and a European presence. The US one's particularly interesting. It bought some companies a while back, so we've got a front end there. So you could say that that would be less exposed to trade tariffs, because software and services haven't been identified yet in that respect. But also it has invested and has a US presence. And so identifying, you know, what to tax and tariff would be very complicated. But it also sold off during the broad market rout. However, we retain our conviction on companies like that. And we've also got a good portion of the portfolio in banks. Now, yes, those banks finance international trade, but they're also domestically driven as well, to the 100 million fast-growing consumer base in Vietnam. So, you know, longer term, I think having that portfolio construction is a good one. But, you know, short term, everything can get shaken a little bit. So having being nimble helps. Having some cash helps, and having some good kind of domestic names in the portfolio is also very, very helpful for us.
So, Craig, will you be changing the composition of the portfolio at all as a result of tariffs? Maybe because there's, you know, during the route that we saw that there's some really good value out there, or on the other side, because you see what's happening down the road, that you may be reducing certain holdings. You know, what's your thinking about the weighting towards certain stocks, and are you going to be changing anything?
Well, look, long term, it's too early to say. You know, we've got 90 days to see what happens in terms of the tariffs. The portfolio, as I mentioned, is already quite domestically oriented, and so that's likely to remain the case. We have been inserting some new names and also some new old names. Portfolio companies that we'd exited because we've made good money, and now maybe they become attractive, either in terms of their price or because perhaps a little bit more defensive. And so some of those might feature more prominently in the portfolio through the rest of this year. So, you know, we're very nimble. We're always looking fastidiously at the portfolio. We're not panicky. We want to kind of balance the long-term strategic objectives of the portfolio, but sometimes it pays to have a tactical edge as well. And with a little bit of cash in the portfolio, we have that flexibility.
So looking at the flexibility there, Craig, have you been buying anything? Have you been snapping up any bargains after the sell-off?
Let's say we've got more cash than usual, so it's always good to have them ready to add to some good names. There's always a danger, particularly in Vietnam, where the market can fall quickly, of catching a falling knife when the market swings very violently. So you do have to be careful. You don't want to lose too many fingers. We've been through a few of these in the past in history, and thankfully all of our fingers are intact. So we have been adding back into some of the names that we hold and we have strong conviction. I don't want to give too much details on those at the moment, so I don't want to tip our hand at this stage. But look, rest assured, we're very nimble and we're always out for a bargain. The market was cheap. Market's become even cheaper. And there are some great names that have long-term defensive characteristics. And we're certainly looking to add more to those.
So I note, Craig, that V&H bought back some of their own shares after the sell-off. Is that something you're going to be doing more of? I think it would be good for listeners if you could revisit your redemption facility as well, because I think that was something that played a big part in Vietnam holding trading at a premium in recent months. It'd be good if you could add some detail around that and your plans about buying back shares and how are you managing that discount?
Yes, certainly. Look, Jonathan, the board has been very active consistently on discount management over the past 7 years or so. Buybacks are one of the tools to control the discount getting out of hand, and that's been used whenever it's needed. And the other tool is the annual redemption feature, which you mentioned. This was introduced over a year ago, and we had the first redemption last year. But when it was announced, actually, that caused the discount to basically disappear. And then for a moment, earlier this year, we were actually able to issue new shares. With the first Vietnam fund to issue new shares in almost 15 years. So the board will continue to use the tools to manage the discount as needed. And their second redemption will be, I think, in September this year. And so that's another opportunity, if people need it, where they can exit at NAV. So it means that the discount shouldn't be that wide. And indeed, that was the reason why the discount narrowed and went to a premium earlier this year. So look, I think we're in a very uncertain global position and people obviously are looking at risk off and managing what that means for them. But when the dust settles and the fundamentals are looked at, then the fact that you've got a high conviction portfolio on the ground in Vietnam with an on-the-ground team managing that portfolio, and then you've got that wrapped in a easy-to-access, well-governed fund listed on the London Stock Exchange, where the board does buybacks but also has an annual redemption facility for investors, that's a lot of positives there. So I think hopefully over time that people, investors will become aware of that and we should see the discount narrow again.
As you mentioned, very commendable accolade there that Vietnam Holding was the only trust to issue shares in the last 15 years. I think that does demonstrate investor demand for the fund. So to summarize now, Craig, and look out beyond the noise, as we may call it, over the next few months, you know, what do you feel that the long lasting impact of tariffs are going to be? You know, do you see it as being noise, as I just said, or do you think that there could be a reset in the Vietnamese economy over the longer term due to the actions of Donald Trump?
Well, from the stock market, I think there are two factors, two keys. The first one is, what are the domestic Vietnamese investors going to feel and do and react? And they're about 90% of the daily trading volumes. And then secondly, whether the changing trade order and risk in the US reverses some of the flows back into Asia and emerging markets. In the last couple of years, we've seen everyone pile into the US and the Magnificent Seven. And, you know, that's creaking a little bit as a trade, and we may see some flow back into Asia. Actually, this month, end of April, we're expected to see the upgrade of the stock market infrastructure in Vietnam. There's a public holiday celebrating 50 years of reunification of the country following the wars. And so that upgrade will be good. That's a physical infrastructure upgrade. And we remain hopeful that come September, FTSE Russell may upgrade their rating on Vietnam from frontier to secondary emerging market. And then, you know, Vietnam's equity market should become more attractive to foreign institutional investors. It's already cheap compared to regional peers. And we hope that, you know, more people will see its attractiveness. So even though Vietnam's currently a frontier market, it can still be a winner. As far as I recall, you don't need to be in the Premier League to win the FA Cup. So, you know, there's a chance for Vietnam to get some silver and rebound on that. It's a resilient country. It's a low-cost manufacturer of many goods and services. High, hungry, well-educated workforce and labor force, hungry to do more and achieve more. It can feed itself. It can export fruits and vegetables all around Asia to China, flowers to Japan, mobile phones to the US and Europe. And so it's got a lot of opportunity. But let's see how, you know, it reacts and adjusts. But I think Vietnam's played its card so far pretty well. And it's a skilled negotiator. And let's see what the next 90 days bring.
You make a very interesting point there about the potential promotion to an emerging market. You know, look preparing for this podcast and look at some of the stats out there. You know, some forecasters, you know, they're talking billions of dollars that come into the Vietnamese stock exchange as a result of that. You know, just one final point here, Craig. You know, when you're looking at those potential flows that come in, are you seeing any early signs of foreign capital, you know, lining up, you know, potentially coming in at this point in time in preparation for the upgrade to emerging markets?
No, not yet. It's been, I think, for the last 18 months across Asia, it's been one-way trade out of emerging markets to the US primarily, and seven stocks. And you could even name one of those seven, which is had a bad day in the market today.
Yes.
I think where you'll see the flow is in the domestic market first. You know, if there's an upgrade announced later this year, then I think domestic investors will be the people that get in early and start to pile back into the market. And then the foreign investors will allocate, you know, over time. So you mentioned a good point. Yes, there could be some initial large flows of money, but I think it's also it improves the status and the awareness of the market, and that can attract both the kind of passive funds, who are the masters of the index makers, as well as the active managers that look for good value, good growth in a great growing economy like Vietnam.
And that's certainly something to look forward to. So, Craig, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
It's my pleasure, Jonathan. Happy to talk to you.
And thank you very much to everyone for listening. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.